Welcome to this month's Pulse. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
Hey, I'm Paul Rothman.
And today we're talking about a couple things that have been really hot issues here at Johns Hopkins. One is this idea of high-value healthcare and our program InHealth.
That's great. I mean, I think they're really both issues that we're focused on. I think value-based healthcare is something that all of medicine is thinking about. Whatever side you're in the healthcare debate, I think it's very clear that we have to somehow think about our healthcare expenditures in this country. 16, 17, 18% of GDP, maybe going up to 20%, depending on the demographics so far. It's unaffordable in this country. And so everyone's thinking about how we can somehow constrain the cost of healthcare. As a physician and as someone in the delivery system, you can think of many ways to cut costs that would do harm to patients. And so when we talk about value, we talk about things we can do to restrain our costs, our expenditures on healthcare, but either maintain the quality or improve the quality of care that we're providing. So the old adage of doing more with less. And that is the basis of what we call value in healthcare. And I think all of us are working really hard at trying to deliver on the promise of increasing the value of healthcare that we provide.
And how does the InHealth initiative fit into that?
InHealth is what we're thinking about in terms of precision medicine. Most therapies that we provide to a patient or patients don't work on 20, 30, up to 50% of patients. The reason is because what we once thought was a single disease, be that asthma, be that type 2 diabetes, there are multiple diseases that we would call a single disease, and what we've learned is that those diseases are really composed of several diseases that have very similar clinical manifestations. Precision medicine, which is our InHealth initiative here at Johns Hopkins University in Medicine, seeks to see if we can more precisely define these subsets of disease, therefore better directing therapies to the patients that will really benefit from those specific therapies. So an example is asthma, where we think there isn't one type of asthma. There are several types of asthma, some of which respond to some therapies and some of which will respond to others, and some of which we don't know yet. Clearly, this issue is true right now in no disease more than cancer, where we know that lung cancer can be divided into several types of lung cancers, each of which will respond to very directed therapies. This whole idea of getting more value in healthcare by more precisely targeting our therapies, that's not only which medicines to use for patients, but it could be who's going to benefit from surgery, who's not going to benefit from surgery, who's going to benefit from this device or that device or this intervention or that intervention is really important for us.
Can you explain to me how exactly that would happen? So let's say that I'm a patient with lung cancer and I want to take advantage of this precision medicine approach. What would happen to me as part of the assessment?
You would come into one of our precision medicine centers of excellence. You would get a bunch of tests that would measure things that we know are important in guiding therapy, and then your therapy would be guided by the results of those tests. It is true in cancer right now, becoming more true of cancer as we're getting better and better tests, sequencing the tumors and other diagnostics, and that's going to spread to every disease we treat. It's most of the large classes of chronic diseases that we treat.
So a genetic assessment, an epigenetic assessment, are these underpinning these strategies?
Well, it depends on the disease. So cancer is a disease of DNA mutations. Therefore, in general, the genetic testing is having profound effects at precisely guiding therapies. For other diseases, some will be genetics, but most of these chronic diseases, be that asthma or type 2 diabetes or Alzheimer's, the genetic component of that disease can be as little as 5 or 10% of predisposition up to 20 or 30%. Therefore, genetics will be a test we use, but probably not the only test we use. We are trying to bring different measures to see what we can do to guide therapy.
How do you think big data is going to help with this?
I think information, data, will be key. I mean, that is what all this is. So it's getting a variety of measures, putting them on an IT platform that our researchers can look at. And we are trying to work with our School of Engineering and our Applied Physics Lab to build a data platform that this data will go in, and that will allow our clinicians and our researchers to try to use that data to form these subsets of patients. So I think data collection is big, and these large gatherings of data are essential in what we're going to do in precision medicine.
You took the show on the road just this week, and I'd like to hear a synthesis view of what you talked about while you were down in D.C. and how this approach may have been integrated with that.
We had a forum in the Senate building this week. Our discussion was how to bring value, more importantly, how to do that in the context of ensuring quality and safety to our patients. And that is another arena where, again, there is obviously negative value in a patient having a bad outcome or a patient getting any therapeutic in them in the hospital that doesn't work or has an adverse effect on or mistakes. What we discussed was different mechanisms to prevent harm, how we're measuring harm, how we're measuring the quality of care we do. And I think a lot of these issues of making sure we have data, analyzing the data, ensuring that benchmarking against peers, and finally, having metrics that are really important, quality measures that are really important, I think was key to how we'll better take care of patients. And so on the value equation, where it is quality and cost, again, providing better care for lower cost.
Here's my last question. This is a pretty, I'm going to call it, siloed kind of a place where lots of people seem to have vested interests in their own area of research or care. How are we going to break down those barriers? Because to me, one thing that underpins all the strategies you're talking about is a profound teamwork.
I actually think this is not a siloed institution. Care in all precision medicine centers of excellence, they're all interdisciplinary clinical centers. All the research we're doing is data analysts, engineers, clinicians, basic scientists. Having been in many institutions, this is not a siloed institution. I think more important point, solve the really important questions in medicine. We have to bring different disciplines. In the old days, our disciplines would be medicine and surgery or pediatrics. Today's disciplines are engineers and chemists and systems biologists and psychologists and pharmacists. But you talk about silos, which are present in all organizations. I think we're looking to bring in people from a much larger array of disciplines to tackle these big problems. So 30 years ago, you wouldn't have engineers at the table and data analysts at the table. Today, they are essential at trying to solve these issues.
Outstanding. You sound like there are some really interesting and exciting things on the horizon.
It is something that I don't think we talk about enough, but having been in medicine for over 30 years, there is no time that's more exciting in terms of changing the way we practice and providing better treatments, more cost-efficient treatments, and higher value to the patients we treat.
Thank you so very much.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth.